What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Two Woke Nerds podcast, the inaugural episode of the Two Woke Nerd podcast. Whoa. Two Woke Nerds, volume one, if you will, I suppose. My name is Raymond Summerlin, and I am joined by my good friend, the man who always watches me from the back of a VW bug whenever I'm making out with my awkwardly forced love interest, Mr. Gerald Goodridge. What's up, Gerald?
Not too much, Ray. Thank you for that glowing intro. I don't know what situation in which I've sat in the back of a VW bug, and I don't know how your wife would feel about being called awkwardly forced.
You know, I was trying to segue into our talking points for today. You know,
got
it. A thing, and it was real metaphorically, you've watched me through all of my awkwardly forced love interests, right?
Got it. Yes. I can agree with that. I can definitely get down with that analysis. But again, I think I've only known you since you were with the woman you're married to, so it could get weird real fast.
Awkwardly forced is a good way to explain our relationship. So this is, like I said, this podcast is going to be a culture podcast. Gerald and I are two longtime nerds. We've always talked about nerdy things. We figured we would do it on a podcast for everybody else to hopefully enjoy. But as I've said to a lot of people throughout my life, at this point in our culture, nerd culture is pop culture. And so, although this week we'll be talking about a lot of video games and comic book movies, in the future, it's just going to be about culture. We'll see. This year's going to be crazy. I mean, we'll see a bunch of Netflix shows coming out. We're going to see a bunch of movies coming out, video game movies we're going to talk about. So it's going to be all about all that kind of stuff. The new Star Wars, which...
Woot woot.
I'm interested in. So yeah. There's so much stuff to talk about here, and that's kind of what this podcast is going to be about. So without any further ado, let's get right into the news. And the biggest news of the week for me, the news that made me giggle the most because of your history with this franchise, is the trailer for the Assassin's Creed movie. Now, I'm a bigger fan of Assassin's Creed than Gerald because I managed to pass the tutorial and actually get into the video game, which it turns out is an important part of fandom, actually being able to play the video game. So even though I'm a bigger fan of Assassin's Creed, I was interested in really what you thought of the trailer and if you're kind of excited for this movie.
Yeah, I couldn't get past those clay pots in the very first intro. I crashed them all. That is like the big black spot on my gaming record. I'm usually pretty good at those things.
That's not the only big black spot on your gaming record. Well, I believe Call of Duty, Halo, those all fall into that range as well.
You know, we'll just leave it at that. We'll talk about that in another week of Gerald Sucks at Shooters. That'll just be a whole nother segment that we do. But as a fan of the video games and just video game movies in general, I don't know why I said that because video game movies are awful. But I was honestly, my first viewing, I was kind of just like, this is all right. And maybe it's my natural aversion to Kanye post like 2006 or so. But I watched it literally a second time right before we got on. And I enjoyed it more that second time. I think I was less focused on the Kanye and more just trying to absorb it because I knew I was going to have to talk about it. Cast of the film makes me a lot more hopeful than I was initially. I was thinking through, like, you know, you've got Fassbender, obviously, Marion Cotillard, who has a weird name to say.
By the way, Kristen Bell not good enough? Bell's a star. Why can't we just have Kristen Bell come play her character?
I don't know. She doesn't have a cool accent, though. You've got the cool accent thing.
But she's Kristen Bell.
You know, I can't argue.
Sorry, that one bothered me. All right.
No, it's all good.
Move past it.
Absolutely. No, I think, but overall, I'm hopeful for it. I think the room-sized Animus was really cool when they came down and grabbed him.
Awesome. Like, that was it was so cool. Yeah. I would sign up for that today. Like, I wouldn't even, like, I'd sign whatever waiver they need me to sign. I hope they have an XL version that I can get into and actually fit in. They're going to need some quality sprockets on those hinges for me to do it. But I would sign up for that immediately. That looked so cool.
Yeah, it was a really cool effect. I loved the Spanish Inquisition. I think it's really cool that they're doing something that's not a direct adaptation of the actual video game property.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's where most video game films seem to falter, is that they do like this super ridiculous adaptation of a narrative that people know and love. And so they isolate their core audience and they isolate the general audience by adapting some really obscure, faithful video game adaptation that like nobody cares about. The nerds don't like it. The regular people don't like it, air quotes, because, you know, that's kind of where we're at, is everybody's a nerd nowadays.
Exactly.
But I'm hopeful for this movie. I think historical epics tend to either be really good or really bad. There's never an average historical epic.
Yeah, you're either Kingdom of Heaven or Alexander.
Exactly.
Those are your two options.
Those are literally your only two options. So I'm hopeful. I'm extremely hopeful for it, but I'm trying to keep it like cautiously optimistic. Because I've been hurt before, right? I've been hurt before.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand that. And there's another video game movie coming out we'll talk about in a second that I think is probably going to be terrible. And so it's kind of, you rock, and that we just witnessed another video game movie, Ratchet and Clank, which bombed unbelievably at the box office. I haven't seen it, but it bombed really bad. What I'll say about this trailer is the fight scenes looked really legit. Like, it looked like some of the best kind of cable work that we've seen in a movie in a very long time. Like, it looked so effortless. It looked really smooth. The fight scenes look like they're going to be great. I didn't like in the trailer that they spent half of it explaining the Assassin's Creed storyline. Mm-hmm. Like, in a TV spot, maybe you need to do that. But who is searching out the Assassin's Creed trailer that doesn't know the whole story, like how it works? It was kind of a weird, this is an animus and we're going to use your DNA to go back into your ancestors. Yeah, we got it, champ. We know how this works. There've been 1,000 games. We've got it. I agree with you completely about not going back to the game. If they had tried to do Ezio Auditore again, like there'd been people with pitchforks, like legitimate pitchforks, because that's such a beloved character. Mm-hmm. I love that character. There's no way you're going to do that character right. And so I agree with you completely about that. And I think that I'm more optimistic about it than you. I mean, I guess that I have a stronger connection to Assassin's Creed than you do. I'm more optimistic, but I share your concern about the video game movies. And that leads us to Warcraft, which is going to be released released this August, right?
I believe so.
Before Assassin's Creed, which will be later in the year. So this movie has Ragnar from Vikings.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know his name. I just know that he's
from, just Ragnar.
He's Ragnar from Vikings, which That's sounds awesome. A lot like Trogdor, which always makes me laugh a lot. Yes. But so he's in this movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big Warcraft fan. I haven't played since Warcraft 2, really. If you're not able to just randomly click on sheep for a while until they explode, I'm not really that interested in the game. So I don't really have a World of Warcraft attachment to this. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't really know where you come from there. So I look at this movie and I say, it looks really, really, really bad. And I'm not interested in it. How about you?
I've actually recently become a huge Blizzard fanboy. Like,
oh, there you go.
Recent resurgence for me. I started playing Hearthstone on my phone after a while and just kind of fell off the deep end. I don't play World of Warcraft because I don't have that kind of time on my hands. I'm an adult. That's going to offend
people. Wow. Throwing fire bombs.
Throwing bombs. No, I just don't. Like, I know myself. If I get into an MMO, I'm going to become even more of a reclusive nerd. So I have to avoid that at all costs. I just don't have that amount of time on my hands. The thing that keeps me really optimistic about this movie is Duncan Jones. Duncan Jones has made some amazing films. Source Code is so phenomenal. I watched an interview with him yesterday, him talking about one of the scenes where he used a video game metaphor to figure out how to film a scene in Source Code. And I was like, all right, I'm going to give this guy a shot. But Moon like blew my mind when I saw it the first time. And that was literally...
I've never seen that. Is it worth the watch?
I think it's phenomenal. It's just Sam Rockwell and a robot has Kevin Spacey's voice.
That's all I needed to know. You had me at Rockwell.
Yeah, you've got Sam Rockwell and you've got Kevin Spacey's voice for like 70 to 80% of that film. He made a compelling movie that was one guy on the moon. Like, it was fantastic. I also just... I want to give it a chance. I want it to be good. I'm not hopeful it's going to be good, but I want it to be good. I really think the characters are cool. The lore is cool if you get into it. This does fall into the trap of trying to retell the video game story from the original Warcraft, which is going to be a struggle for a lot of people, but I also think we're so far removed from the original Warcraft that it's not like we're trying to remake it now. What year did the original Warcraft come out? Warcraft, Orcs and Humans?
96, I don't know, 95, I don't know.
You are almost spot on. Sorry, Wikipedia is not loading as quickly as I want it to. And, like, where are the date? 95, right?
Woo!
Wow, 95, you are a champion.
Thank you. I was 10 then, but I was real into video games.
Yeah, hey, something's never changed, though. Some things never change.
No, I like you. I want it to be good. I don't know. Something that I thought would be terrible and a review came out for this week and suggested it's terrible is the new X-Men, I guess, movie, X-Men Apocalypse. And this was on Forbes. We'll link to it in the show notes. And it was a review of the movie that called it a franchise-killing disaster. Yikes.
Wow.
That's not good. So are you optimistic at all? I mean, when we watched, I guess it was Days of Future Past where we first saw Apocalypse.
Yes.
And so whenever you watch that, you think Apocalypse, I know, and we'll talk about this when we get into Civil War. I know you're more of a comic book buff than I am. I really don't read them at all. It's just not something I ever got into. I love the movies, but I never really read the comics. And so from all my comic book friends, I heard, oh, Apocalypse, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. Have they messed it up? What happened?
I don't know. I know initially my reaction was Apocalypse looked like Ivan Ooze from the Power Rangers movie. That was my initial reaction, as most people on the internet would agree with. I was hopeful, though. We haven't gone wrong with this reboot. After we got past X3, both of the last two movies have been phenomenal. I've loved them both. So I've had a lot of faith in Bryan Singer. But the reviews are making me less hopeful. I looked at kind of an overview of some of the other reviews on Rotten Tomatoes just a couple of minutes ago, and the reviews seem to hit on this one thing of it's a lot of action and not enough story, which is frustrating to me, because that's one of like the most rich villains they have in the X-Men mythos is Apocalypse. And so the fact that they couldn't drum up enough story for that character with these characters we've had two movies to fall in love with now is frustrating. You know, growing up reading the X-Men comics, there were two storylines that I wanted to, like, when they started making comic book movies, two storylines I really wanted to see adapted, and it was the Phoenix and it was Apocalypse. And now both of them are tarnished or tainted, possibly just ruined, which is frustrating to me as a comic book fan. But it makes me hopeful that Marvel properties will continue to tank and Marvel and Disney will be able to buy them up and get them back home where they belong, because they truly understand these characters. And we'll talk more about that when we get to Civil War later on, but they truly get the characters. And so I think that's part of what may be happening here is we're seeing a lot of people with their hands in the pot that don't get the characters truly. And they're just trying to make a movie with cool looking characters.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of that. And we certainly saw that in the first X-Men trilogy, which I didn't even like the second one. I know people like the second one more. I didn't think it was great. All of the Wolverine things they've done have just been, it's just been bad. Yeah. And so I agree. I'm really hopeful that at some point we get all the Marvel movies back in one place, like with Spider-Man, we'll talk about later, that it's going to be a lot better. Moving to the other side of the aisle on the DC comics, after a terribly reviewed movie that, full disclosure, I did not see and don't plan to see, in Batman versus Superman. I had no desire to see it. I will not see it. They're going to move on in the Justice League, and it turns out that Ben Affleck has been promoted to executive producer. Do you think that that's a good move? Do you think this is a panic move? What do you think's happening?
I don't know if it's a panic move per se. I think the panic move would have been to just scrap it and start over or change directors. I think this shows me two things. One, it shows me that Affleck has faith in Zack Snyder, which I don't understand, but maybe they'll prove me wrong. But the other thing that it proves to me is that they understand what went wrong with Batman versus Superman. Because what this does in my mind is it gets somebody that understands how to tell a story helping helm this film. Because Affleck, you can make your jokes about him from the early 2000s, but in the last like 10 years, dude knows how to tell a story. Like,
I have down here in my notes, Good Will Hunting, Good Will Hunting is just an astounding movie.
Absolutely.
The Town was great.
Yep.
Argo was great.
Yep.
If we're talking about Ben Affleck as a storyteller, as a director, as a writer, and we can make jokes about how much of Good Will Hunting he wrote. Yeah. But if you're talking about him as a director and writer, I think that his record is almost impeccable.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to get him in there to actually tell a story, then I agree with you. I think it's a great move.
And the thing with it is the guy who wrote Batman vs. Superman, Chris Terrio, is not a bad writer. And the last good movie he wrote was Argo, which Affleck was a producer on. And so I think they're going to be able to figure it out. Because really, and again, from the comic book perspective, like, they have three of the biggest iconic characters in comic book history. Like, three of the, like, people outside of nerddom, even if nerddom is not really a thing anymore, people outside of that understand Superman. They understand the symbolism. I almost said symbology.
You're talking about Aquaman, right? Aquaman's the third. That's who you're talking
Aquaman, yes. Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And
Aquaman, I got it.
And I cared about none of them. Like, I'm sitting there. I don't care about their conflict. I don't care about anything that's going on. It was a gorgeous movie. The action scenes were beautiful. They were beautifully shot. They were beautifully choreographed, which is what Snyder does well. And so if you get somebody in there that can tell a story, hopefully that will help right the ship here, because I really think, like, DC has such a rich catalog of characters and of heroes. They're also iconic. If you get somebody in there that can tell a story, you see it with The Flash on TV. You saw it with the Dark Knight trilogy. Like, those characters, when done well, when treated well, somebody who knows how to tell a story, like Christopher Nolan is a master craftsman of telling a story. Those characters will draw people. You will make the largest grossing film of all time if you tell a good story with these iconic characters.
Yeah, I agree completely. I'm not a Superman fan. I never have been. I don't like the idea of Superman. I've always said this. If you have to invent a rock, which is the only way that you can actually do something to him, then you have a terrible character. I'm not a Superman fan. I know that everybody else is. I love Batman. I absolutely adore Batman. He might be my favorite superhero. Deadpool's my favorite superhero, but that's because we're both 12-year-olds. But I think that Batman is really a great character with an interesting array of storytelling options. And from all accounts, and like I said, I didn't watch it and don't plan to, they appeared to have mangled it. And so it's, hopefully they can get it turned around. Moving on to the last little bit of news here before we get into Civil War, and this goes pretty nicely into Civil War. It turns out that the Russo brothers, I believe, I forget which one said this, said the Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2, that was when we were looking into Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they were always going to be named Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2. And they said that they're going to change those names. Why did they say that?
They said that because they say that naming them Infinity War Part 1 and Part 2 is misleading, which is really cool. They talked to one of the writers from UpRocks, I think earlier this week, and they said that naming those two things were misleading. I also think it's probably a reaction to, like, splitting the Hunger Games books in half and all of that mess. But it's promising to me, because I was always afraid that it was going to be some, like, cosmic cliffhanger, and then you get two or three movies in between, and then it's the wrap up. And so,
yeah, how do you have, like, that was always my thing, how do you have a cosmic cliffhanger and then Captain Marvel comes out? What is Captain Marvel doing?
Yeah, that's the big answer with all of these MCU movies, is like, where are the other heroes when this is going on? Like, why didn't Tony Stark call all of the other heroes during the events of Iron Man 3.
Yeah, it's confusing. Yeah. So they said that they're going to have two different stories. That leads me into an interesting kind of idea and what the two stories are. Mm. You would assume that the second movie, Part 2, if you will, or whatever they're going to call it, that's going to be the big battle with Thanos, right?
That I w- Yeah. I'm assuming that because he hasn't, in, if you're looking at MCU lore, and I'm going to get super nerdy, he doesn't have all of the Infinity Gems yet.
Well, he doesn't have any of them, right? Unless he got it from the collector off screen and we didn't know about.
Yeah.
Or unless he got it from the treasure room and we didn't know about it. He doesn't have, does he have any of the Infinity Stones?
You saw the stinger where he grabbed the gauntlet. So I'm assuming that there's somewhere in the background those things are happening. I would assume. And so I think where my mind is part one is going to be collecting the Infinity Stones. You have your big, oh crap moment at the end of it. We have some segue that builds into it with these the rest of the Phase 3 movies. And then you get your big conclusion, the big cosmic battle with Thanos that brings everything together. The Guardians come in and Captain Marvel comes in and she's awesome and with the Mohawk or whatever she's going to do and be awesome. And so that's where I'm thinking my head is at. Is part one, whatever we're going to call it, is assembling the gauntlet. And part two is the aftermath of what happens after the gauntlet is assembled.
And part one could also be, and they could do this in the Black Panther movie. They kind of set it up at the end in the trailer afterwards of after the credits of Civil War and the Black Panther movie that they're going to be other Avengers involved in this when for sure that movie, that standalone movie for sure.
Absolutely.
But you know, at some point they're going to have to reassemble too. So I guess that's the first story. The first story is, you know, bearing their differences, reassembling, things like that. And then the second story is the battle. They also have a lot of people they have to find. They have to go find the Guardians somehow, unless the next Guardians movie is them, you know, getting involved or whatever. They have to go find the Guardians. I guess we're never going to see the Defenders, which makes me...
That makes me sad, yeah.
Makes me sad face. Yeah. But that's, I mean, I guess that's where it is. But so there's lots of things to do. And so I can understand why they wouldn't want it to be part one and part two.
Yeah.
But it... The real, like, I guess the big takeaway here is every single movie since the beginning has been leading up to Infinity War Part 2.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like every single movie has had, every single part of the movie franchise has had an Infinity Stone involved in it. Like, literally every one, right?
Yeah.
So they knew what they were doing from entire time. And so even if they're not going to call it 1 and 2, this whole thing has been building to that last movie. And so it's going to be interesting to watch.
Absolutely. I'm super excited for it. I remember sitting in the theater the first time you saw the post-credit stinger with Thanos.
Oh, it was beautiful.
And my mind exploded. Like literally brain matter all over the theater. I don't know how I'm still sitting here.
Literally?
It happened. Literally.
You are looking disfigured a little bit.
We'll talk about Preacher maybe in some coming weeks and how my face is disfigured like a character from that show.
So let's move on to the meat and potatoes here. We both saw Civil War on opening weekend. You're a better nerd than me. You saw it on Thursday night.
That's a date night for me and my wife. We do date nights on Thursdays, and she knows essentially every 3 to 6 months we're going to go see a Marvel movie as a date. And she's totally down for it.
That sounds good to me. I saw it on Saturday at the IMAX, so I'm going to hold that one above you.
Yes.
I guess the way to start this about Civil War is just some kind of initial thoughts. So what do you got?
Man, I was blown away. Like I did not expect it to be that good. Like I expected it to be good, but I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I did. I didn't expect it to be as tightly edited as it was. That was something that I was super impressed by. It felt like the first act felt like a Bourne movie, like jumping from place to place, setting up the scene, bringing all of the characters together. We'll get into spoilers later on. I feel like we don't want to spoil everything.
We should lay a spoiler alert claim at the top of this, right?
Definitely.
If you haven't seen Civil War, pause and go watch the movie now.
What are you doing listening to a podcast Civil War?
What are you doing with your life?
That is a very valid point. Very valid point. If you're listening to a podcast about a film that you haven't seen, there are probably other conversations that need to be had. And we'll talk about a little bit more later, but as a comic fan, like this was one of the biggest times where I sat in the theater and was like, holy Moses, I am watching a comic book on screen. That was the feeling throughout several scenes. We'll dive into it a little bit more later, but that was the awe-inspiring moment I had. Was like, I am watching these characters even more so than any of the Avengers movies for me, because Cap is a personal favorite of mine. But watching some of these scenes and seeing the action, seeing the big bombastic things happening, it felt like it was a comic book come to life, and it was just a dream for me.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, I mentioned it before. I'll continue to mention it as you guys get to know us. I am not a comic book reader, and I have no shame in admitting that. It's just not what I do. I read philosophy books. What are you going to do? So kind of comic books.
Yeah, depends on how you view it.
Descartes was a superhero in my mind. So
wow.
Thank you. So I don't really have that same connection to these stories. I knew, like, again, from you and from other people, I knew Civil War is a cool story, and so I was really interested to see it. But I approach all of these movies, because I'm a movie guy, I approach all of them like a movie. And I think that my initial thought when I watched this was, I'm going to really like Phase 3. Because we're done with the introductions.
Yep.
And even though there was an introduction with Black Panther, it was done really well. Even though there was an introduction with Spider-Man, which is kind of a half introduction for everybody, it was done so amazing. They didn't do the Uncle Ben scene.
Praise the Lord.
Oh, it was so glorious.
Yeah.
It was like they did it so good. You know, we know these characters. We've been with these characters. We know their motivations. Now it's just time to live in this world in real time. And that's a really exciting development. Mm-hmm. And I know we're going to get some more characters. We're going to get Doctor Strange, and we're going to get some more characters down the road. But I think that if I'm watching, my first reaction to this, my first thought from this was, they're finally comfortable in their world that they've created, and now we can just live in it. And that's a really, really exciting, kind of thought.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that. Right before the film came out, Kevin Feige talked about how they're done assuming people haven't seen any of their movies. Like, these are the biggest grossing movies every year. So they can stop with the assumption of, we've got to catch people up, which is such a good place to be, because all the exposition, the first act of all these films is already, you're already done. You're already there, which is great. So they can just jump in and get going. And if you haven't seen any of these other movies, you probably should catch up on the last 10 years of pop culture, essentially.
Yeah, so, exactly. No, and that allowed for the pace of the movie to be so much better. The movie was paced so much better. Instead of trying to fit a whole bunch of exposition into the first act and then jumping from calamity to calamity, as superhero movies often do, and drives me nuts. Then you really didn't see that. You still saw the chase scenes, some of the iconic chase scenes. You still saw the iconic fight scenes that I know you love. I'm less excited about, but I mean, I know that it's a superhero movie and that's what it's about, but you didn't have to have the entire movie be exposition. And then you could kind of breathe. And I think that brings me to my big thought is that this was not just a good superhero movie. This was a good movie.
Yeah.
And that is really important in the world that we've created, in the pop culture world we've created, because we live in a world of superhero movies, and that's just the way that it is. Star Wars, for crying out loud, is a superhero movie. Those people can do things that regular humans can't. So to come out here and say, you know, all right, we live in a world of superhero movies, that means that superhero movies have to be used to tell the same stories we used to tell. And that what they were able to do in this movie was that, and they did it exquisitely. They set up the rabbit with the Accords that we thought we were all going to be chasing that rabbit the entire movie. It kind of started out, it looked like it was going to be a superhero movie, very clear, very linear storyline, and it looked like that was what they were going to do. And then throughout the movie, they subtly weaved in these really human ideas of betrayal, of revenge, of friendship. And then you get to the end of the movie and they reveal it and say, this movie wasn't about the Accords at all, which literally the last 20 minutes of the movie aren't mentioned, right?
Yeah.
No one talks about them. Nope. This was really about these two friends having a falling out about betrayal, about revenge, about these basic human emotions that we all feel. And it was very humanizing for these characters who can do inhuman things to see them feel these base emotions that we all feel. And it was a great movie. It was executed perfectly. The way they weaved it through the storyline at the beginning and it comes back at the end, you go, oh my God, it all comes back to you. I thought it was exquisite. And that's really important for me, I think, as we move on, that if they're going to start making the superhero movies be good movies and not good superhero movies, that's a game changer. And it's something I really look forward to.
Absolutely. I think these are the mythological gods. Like, these are the Greek and Roman gods of our time. And so I think the fact that movie makers and storytellers now are treating them not just as these base pulp stories for kids. They're treating them
blockbuster summer nonsense. They're not treating it like that anymore.
No, they're treating them like their actual characters with actual human motivations. And the thing I think that resonated the most with me is just like, these are all like, you and I have had differences of opinions. We don't have superpowers. If we did, probably look like this. Everybody can identify with that. You're giving these, like you said, unidentifiable characters, like these things that I can identify with as a human, as a man, as someone who has emotions, who's had differences of opinions, who's wanted to punch my friends in the head on numerous occasions.
Not, obviously not me, right?
No, not other guys, other people. But it was expertly done. And I think, I don't know why I didn't expect it to be like that. The Russos crushed it with Winter Soldier. So there's no way that I should not have been expecting this, but I wasn't, and it caught me off guard, and it was amazing.
And to kind of play off that, even if we go back to the other Marvel movies, like, so the Avengers, the original Avengers, I believe, is, I sometimes get them all messed up. Maybe it was Avengers 2, I forget. What's the one where Thor and Loki fight?
That is the original Avengers.
Yeah. I thought so. So that entire movie is about these brothers fighting.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, he puts them in handcuffs and they go back to Asgard.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing.
Yeah.
The Hulk beats him into the ground and then there's literally nothing. There's no emotion.
Yeah.
If BDM and I fought like BDM's my brother. If if we fought like that, you know, for months and almost destroyed the world, we'd probably have a conversation about it.
Probably.
Maybe once or twice. Yeah. So this idea that even old Marvel movies didn't manage this kind of emotional connection that this one did. And it plays out, I know we're skipping a little bit, plays out here to Zemo too, the villain, who I don't have a long history with him. I read a little bit of backstory on him, but I thought, and I what I gather is this was not the character from the comic books.
Not at all.
They did him perfect. He was, and that actor's great. He was obviously in Inglourious Basterds and was great in that movie. Yep. And I think I've seen him in another movie, but I just from Inglourious Basterds, you could tell he's a great actor. He did a great job with it. But the fact that this is just a normal human guy who said, these people have wronged me and I want to go and get them. Again, that revenge arc. It's just, it was great. That character was excellent. And it's because of those same reasons. This is a real human dealing with real human emotions.
Yeah, like you said, I was expecting something vastly different from Zemo in the film, but I was so pleasantly surprised. I was, you know, in the comics, he's this maniacal villain who's got these powers and blah. I'm not going to dive into it too deep, but Daniel Brühl is the name of the actor, and he like completely. Like, just drew me in with everything. And I was guessing, like, what is his endgame? Like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And honestly, when they went into Act 3 and they what I thought was going to be the big reveal of him breaking out these other Winter Soldiers, I was disappointed. It's like, this movie has been so expertly crafted. It's been so subversive to what we expect from a comic book movie. I was like, it's going to be 7 super soldiers and a big fight at the end. Meh, whatever. I'm done with it. And then when the reveal happened, and it wasn't that at all, and the nation he was bringing down was not what we expected it to be, like, I was floored, absolutely floored.
I have not been that surprised. When they walked into that room and saw the bullet holes, I have not been that surprised in a movie in a very long time.
Yeah.
I went, this, because, and it's kind of, you know, they get a little bit of advantage here because they're the ones that created the storyline that we expect to see.
Yeah.
And now they can come back and they can subvert that storyline.
Absolutely.
But they did it expertly. And I absolutely loved it. Now, a main part of all these storylines has to be what you're calling the splash page scenes.
Yes, the splash pages.
The chase, the airport. So tell me why you love those and then we can talk about why I disagree.
Yeah. No, I mentioned it earlier, but you know, you see the big colorful splash pages in comic books, and those scenes for me, they weren't, you know, they're not the big emotional core of the movie. I honestly think the best fight of the film was the one at the end when it was just Bucky and Cap and Iron Man. Like, that was soul crushing. But you see those as a comic book fan, you see those things and you completely feel like I'm watching a comic book on screen. I remember the first time I had that thought was the big chase scene where they're running through the tunnels, and that was part of where you talked about like the subtle exposition and the subtle character introduction. They didn't have to introduce you to the fact that Black Panther was a superhero. He has these superpowers. They just let him do superhuman stuff, and you filled in the gaps because we all understand this process now.
And correct me, was that a direct scene from the comic books? I read that it was.
Honestly, was
the airport? The airport was the direct.
Yeah, there are a couple of those. Yeah, but for me, that was the moment where like I was just thinking like they're jumping over cars and Bucky does the turning on a dime with the motorcycle, and it was just like these are things that I would reenact these things with my action figures, and I would think about them, and I'd fall asleep dreaming about them because I'm a sad nerd. But like those moments, and then the airport fight happens, and that was such fan service. And I understand that not everybody loves that, but I leaned over to my wife, and I was that annoying guy in the movie that whispers to the person next to him. But I leaned over to my wife before that, and I said,
"John Voight has a shotgun."
John Voight has a shotgun. We'll get into some of our inside jokes later on. Transformers 2 was such a fun time for us. College Raymond and Gerald were interesting. No, but I leaned over to my wife and I said, if Hawkeye shoots Ant-Man on an arrow, I may just die.
And then
it happened.
Yes, it did.
It stinking happened. And the repartee between the characters, the back and forth, and one of the most underrated lines in that whole, one of the most underrated moments in that piece was, it was so subtle when they're walking in and Tony Stark just says, "Oh, hey, Clint." And I was like, that's exactly, like, these are friends that are having an ideological conflict. Like, it was just one of those moments where, like, that is the emotional core of the movie right there. It was so good. We'll talk more about this later on when we get into Spider-Man and some of those things, but just the way that they use that to introduce characters, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, and I've never been a huge fan of, and not just in superhero movies, in any action movie that doesn't star Arnold Schwarzenegger, because Arnold Schwarzenegger can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, whatever.
Because Commando exists, and so after you make Commando, you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But these, you know, all of these fight scenes and chase scenes always seem 5 minutes too long. I think a movie that we will definitely talk about on a future podcast, the upcoming Bourne movie.
Yeah.
I think that franchise has always suffered from this. Mm-hmm. The most interesting parts of the Bourne movies are not the chase scenes and the fight scenes. They're everything that happens in between them.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they have to put those things in there, and I understand that they're necessary, and I don't begrudge them. But like you said, the best fight scene was the last fight scene, which had three people, had no set. I mean, it had a cool looking set piece because of the kind of overflow thing, but it wasn't this huge set piece. It didn't have a lot of explosions. It was just raw emotion. And, you know, that was a super cool fight scene. Like the best martial art fight scenes you see aren't the ones that have 1,000 people. They're the one that's in the bathroom in the Jet Li movie. What movie was that? I forget what movie that was.
The one? There was some terrible Jet Li movie. I think it was the one.
But that fight scene in the bathroom was awesome. Or Viggo Mortensen rolling around naked in a sauna.
Yeah, like, I think it made me think.
Eastern Promises.
Yeah, it honestly reminded me of The Raid. I don't know if you've seen The Raid.
Yeah, I love The Raid.
Yeah, the fight scene when it's just the two brothers and the little guy.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
That's what it reminded me of. Like, it was so tense, and that. I can't. I honestly was afraid Cap was going to kill him. Like, I was just like, this is over. I don't know what's going to happen. My black was white, up was down. But that was the core of the movie. Like, the emotional overflow of these two guys that just don't know how to handle everything that's going on around them. It's become so much bigger than anything they ever thought was going to happen. And they're just overwhelmed with it. And I thought that was something that I loved, is that they were, neither of them were right. Neither of them were right in this conflict. They both had good points. They both had bad points. It's just like life. Like, it's life. Nobody is 100% right. No one's 100% wrong. It's all just gray.
Yeah, and I, that's kind of my point, is that when you have that emotional kind of connection, you can have a fight scene that I absolutely loved, absolutely adored. And so that's really kind of my point about the whole blockbuster idea, is that, you know, you can have Michael Bay with monsters coming out, or even Michael or even Michael Bay I like in Bad Boys. You can have those ridiculous chases, but if there's nothing behind it, it's not as interesting as three guys in a concrete bunker fighting it out. And so it was really, really good. You mentioned Spider-Man in the airport scene.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. It was It was great. And I know you asked a question here on Rundown. Is that the best on-screen portrayal of Spider-Man? Before this, have there been any good ones? I think would be my question.
I didn't hate Andrew Garfield completely.
All right. So full disclosure, I did not watch the Andrew Garfield ones. Full disclosure, I have no plans to ever watch
You don't
them.
Need to. You don't need to. There were some good parts. The second one was kind of an abysmal mess, but I think the reason why I like the Andrew Garfield portrayal so much was that the Sam Raimi ones got Peter Parker and Spider-Man so wrong that I was just like, they're closer. Like, he's funny, he's got a personality. But the thing that drew me back from Garfield was there's, like, Spider-Man is the lovable loser, and there's no way that somebody that looks like Andrew Garfield is ever going to be a loser. Like, it's not possible. He's a good-looking dude. Whatever, I'm married, it's fine. But there's no way that somebody like Andrew Garfield's ever going to come up unlucky in love. Like, it's just not a humanly possible thing. But it was, like, the subtle things. Like, you could totally tell that, surprise, surprise, Marvel Comics understands the Marvel comic character. The little things, like the banter, the fact that, like, his computer was something that you pulled out of the trash. Like, he's a poor kid from New York that just happens to be in the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the wrong time, depending on how you feel about it. But he gets so overwhelmed in these situations that he can't help but crack a stupid joke. So he's saying stupid things, and he's overwhelmed, and he's like, oh my gosh, these are these superheroes that I adore, and oh my gosh, I'm one of them now. And he's overwhelmed by the whole situation, so he diffuses the tension with humor. And I love that they didn't have to spell out, one, the Uncle Ben thing. Like, I was in the theater rolling my eyes when I thought it was going to happen, and then the little just one-off soliloquy about, if you have these powers and you do nothing, then it's your fault. And that was like a punch in the gut.
Oh, it's perfect. Yeah. Absolutely perfect.
And then they subtly showed you how strong he is in the big airport fight. Like, they didn't have to say, oh, he can lift X number of pounds and he can do all these things. They were just like, cool, you understand what superheroes are. Let's show you one of them and compare and contrast. Oh, he can catch a punch from the Winter Soldier. Cool, that shows you how strong he is. He can hold up this railway car. Cool, that shows you how strong he is. He can do these things. Oh, and he's smart. They just showed you those things. Show, not tell is the best way I can describe how they introduced him. It was just impeccable. It was so good.
Yeah, and I'm not after Tobey Maguire, like I said, I did not watch the Garfield ones. I have no desire to ever see them.
You can just skip them at this point. You're fine.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Gwen Stacy dies. Okay. I really don't care in any discernible way, but I do think that now I'm looking forward to Homecoming.
Yeah.
And that's a big departure from where I was with the Spider-Man franchise. And so, I'm coming around to his voice.
I'm coming around to it. I can give you that.
It's still a bit annoying.
Yeah.
It is still a bit childish, but
that's part of the character though. He's a teenager,
but it's, you could do a childish, less grating.
Okay.
But if Marissa Tomei's in the movie, I'm in.
Well, I know your feelings about Marissa Tomei.
100% in. Yeah. No matter what, I will see any movie she's in, 100% in. I am sold. Another new character that they absolutely nailed is the Black Panther. I know you loved that portrayal.
Yeah. Chadwick Boseman, by the way, whoever his agent is needs the most amount of money humanly possible. He plays Jackie Robinson. Man, I just blanked on who else he's played. But he played Jackie Robinson, James Brown, Black Panther. He's about to play Thurgood Marshall in a movie. Like, how many more icons of African American culture can he play? Like, as an African American, like, that is so awesome that somebody is just owning all of these iconic people in African American culture and history. It's super impressive. But his portrayal was so good that I actually had to convince my wife via YouTube videos that he's an American. Like, that's how good she's like, no, he's got to be something. I was like, no, babe, he is from America, like, straight up American dude.
Not even like America, South Carolina, which is,
yeah,
that's America as you get. That's America as you get.
That's a whole other world. But they just, again, with the subtle introductions of the character, they didn't have to say, oh, he's this guy from Wakanda who can do these things because he's the protector of this technologically advanced African country. No, they just showed you. Like, he jumps onto the scene, is kicking tail, taking names. They didn't have to say, oh, he's got this vibranium suit. They just let bullets bounce off of it. And he totally encapsulated this elegant, this regal warrior mentality.
Calmer and cooler than anybody else on the screen at every moment.
Absolutely. And the fact that they completely encapsulated a full character arc for him in about 20 minutes of screen time is just amazing storytelling. Like, they went from exposition to denouement, which is a super, super terrible, pretentious thing to say, but they went from A to Z in like 20 minutes of screen time. And that's a testament to the writing, to testament to Chadwick Boseman's ability to act. He's just, I can't say enough about how awesome he is, and I cannot wait to see the Black Panther film that's coming. It's going to be so – I'm just so impressed with how they've handled that character.
And they left things too, but they kind of nudged at him. You see the bodyguard that's going to go and take on Black Widow, and then and they go, no, we'll wait to sew that, which I can't wait to see. I can't wait to see them in action.
Oh,
it's going to be sand stakes on meth. It's going to be wonderful. So the – so this brings us to phase three. I think that we're pretty clear here that I'm looking forward to Spider-Man and Black Panther. I know you're looking forward to Black Panther, who some big news came out of Black Panther today. What's that news?
Yes. Michael B. Jordan has been cast as an undisclosed character, along with Lupita Nyong'o, who was cast, I think, yesterday, or they announced it yesterday.
I think they said they're in talks, but I bet that happens. And she's obviously fantastic. Oscar winner, right? She won the Oscar for 12 years.
Oscar winner for 12 Years a Slave. Yeah. She's already in the Mickey Mouse family. She's in Star Wars. She's going to be in Episode 8.
Hold on. Is she really in Star Wars?
Yeah. Maz Kanata is a character. She does the performance capture. She's the voice. I thought she was in Star Wars.
That bothered me.
We'll do a whole Star Wars
episode. Yeah, we do a whole Star Wars.
Yeah. But it was funny. I was joking about this with somebody at work earlier that it seems like anybody that plays the Human Torch in a terrible film is going to get cast in a Marvel movie. And then I get home and I open up my news feed and I'm like, oh, Michael B. Jordan cast in talks for Black Panther. I'm assuming anybody that's in talks for a Marvel movie is going to do it. Like it would be stupid not to at this point. It's a career making move for a lot of people. So I'm super excited to see that. But I think phase three, and this is, there are so many cool movies in phase three. I'm like the one Thor fan out there. So I'm actually kind of marginally excited for Thor Ragnarok. Raymond's shaking his head. I thought the first Thor movie was probably one of the best phase one films not named Iron Man. Like, I thought that the first Thor film, like, Kenneth Branagh made a Shakespearean film about superheroes. It's kind of the same thing why Civil War was great.
I agree with you completely about that. Yeah. I'm just done with Thor at this point.
Dark World was awful. His subplot in Age of Ultron was nonsensical, made zero sense. But I want to see how that wraps up. I'm upset Natalie Portman's probably not coming back for that one. It's a big black mark against that film in my book. But I like me some Hemsworth. I think it's going to be okay. I'm going to go see it on opening day anyways.
You and Sarah can go see it together because she loves the Hemsworths more than anything in this world. So you can go watch that together and report back to me
I'll shoot you some texts.
I'm not interested.
I think Doctor Strange is going to be so weird. I'm excited to see how they do it. I'm so excited to see how they take this super weird. I'm not trying to make a pun, but this is just a strange, this odd character, and put it on screen.
They named him that for a reason.
Exactly. I'm Benedict Cumberbatch sounds like he's kind of doing a Dr. House impersonation. I'm not 100% sold on his accent yet, but it's like splitting hairs. It's like picking which one of my children is my favorite, try to pick out phase three films. But I would say probably Doctor Strange. I think Ant-Man and the Wasp is going to be cool. I think the things that aren't sequels in Phase 3 are the ones that excite me the most. Doc Strange, Black Panther, and Captain Marvel, probably the three that I'm the most excited about.
See, I could give or take Ant-Man. I'm just not interested in it. There's something really exhilarating about Doctor Strange for me because I'm going in almost blind.
Yeah.
He's one of those, because I'm not a comic book reader, we'll say it a couple more times.
Yeah.
He's one of those characters that I really don't know that much about. I know the backstory. I know he's a surgeon. I know he was in a wreck and he had nerve damage and he couldn't do surgery and he went out and looked. I know all this stuff. I know he's a sorcerer and like protector of the realm or something like that.
Yeah. Sorcerer Supreme.
Yeah, awesome. So I know the basic, I know, you know, the broad strokes of Doctor Strange, but I am going into this story almost blind from a story perspective, and there's something really, really exhilarating about that. And I'm looking forward to that movie a lot. I love Cumberbatch. I mean, or Cumberbatch, Sherlock.
Sherlock, just, yeah, it's the best thing ever. Like, how
just,
do you not?
It's wonderful.
It's great.
And so I love him, and I'll be interested in watching that. I'm very interested in Guardians because Chris Pratt is my love interest.
Yeah.
And anything that he's going to do is just going to be fantastic. And then, I mean, as we're finishing it up, I'm really interested to see how they finish up the Thanos storyline because they've literally been building to it for a decade.
Yeah,
literally for a decade they've been building to it. So at some point we're gonna have to see what they do. I hope it doesn't turn out like Lost and they really had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah.
But you know, they're building to it now. So at the end of every episode, we're gonna do this thing that's called Don't Sleep on It
with the woke nerds theme. Yeah, I like it.
I like it a lot, actually.
Good.
Don't sleep on it.
It's the best thing I'm going to do all day is come up with that. Probably all week, really.
What about if like I added a yo at the end? Would that be too much? Would that be too like 1992 if I added a yo? Don't sleep on a yo.
That would be very 1992, which would be fitting for you, but I don't know if people would listen to us again. I'm not sure.
So anyway, Don't Sleep on It, in which we're going to talk about kind of some things that we're looking at in the cultural landscape, be it movie, be it TV, be it music, be it comic, be it video game, lots of things, anything that we're doing, anything we're watching, anything we're listening to, and really talk about it. And I know kind of in the same Marvel Cinematic Universe, not a cinematic universe, Marvel Universe, is you want to talk a little bit about Doctor Strange the Oath.
Yeah, so this Saturday, for those of you guys that don't know, it's Free Comic Book Day, and I went to my local comic shop. There's a really cool comic book shop, New World Comics, here in Oklahoma City. Actually, one of the managers of that place helped my wife write her wedding vows. Side note, that's why I like to support them. But I couldn't go into my local comic shop without buying something. I'd never read Doctor Strange books at all. So I picked up, I'd heard good things about it. It was a limited series in 2006, kind of like a TV miniseries. But it was a super fast read. I probably read it like 30, 45 minutes. But it gave you like this super encapsulated, like, here's everything you need to know about Doctor Strange from A to Z. Origin story, main villains, like who he is, what he's about, like all of the little terms, the weird things, the Eye of Agamotto and the fact that he's a Sorcerer Supreme and he learned from the Ancient One. Like everything is encapsulated in, I think it was 6 original issues of this comic book. It, like I said, it took me like an hour to read. It was just really interesting, and it's a good way if you're trying to find an easy on-ramp to this weird Doctor Strange universe that exists. I would recommend it.
Yeah, I might. I'm not going to break my – I don't want to break my comic book not reading streak, but I'll try to find like Cliff Notes or a wiki. There's got to be a wiki, right?
Oh, there's a wiki for everything.
Sure. I'll find it. But yeah, if you want an on-ramp, that sounds awesome. Yeah. What I want to talk about – first of all, the first thing I want to talk about, it dropped – today, so right before we got on, I've only listened to 3 songs. Chance the Rapper debuted a new mixtape.
Okay.
I love my boy Chance. I've loved my boy Chance for a long time.
Yeah.
Surf was a great record with the did with Donnie Trumpet. Everybody knows that record. New mixtape out. Kanye's on the first track, so you might not want to listen to it. But it's great. Yeah, it's absolutely great. And the first 3 songs I heard were great, and so I'm interested to dive into it. But I figured my last thing I could do on the podcast, I've been too positive this whole podcast. Like, I'm looking forward to Assassin's Creed. I thought Civil War was great. That's not me in any discernible way. So I didn't want to give you guys false pretenses about my positive nature. I am negative all the time. And one show that has allowed me to continue to be negative is Fear the Walking Dead, which is absolutely horrific. Like, it's hard to overstate how bad the show is. Now, I know you're not an original Walking Dead fan, right?
I'm not an original Walking Dead fan in the slightest bit.
See, I like the original one for what it is. I know it's got terrible things that it does, but I enjoy it. I think it's fine. That show is ridiculous in a lot of ways and uses some kind of wonky plot devices, but it's like they took everything bad out of The Walking Dead and put it into Fear the Walking Dead. They use terrible plot devices. The characters don't learn anything ever about anything. they go through an episode and then they learn a lesson supposedly through a ridiculous plot device. And then by the next episode, they've completely forgot that lesson and we're back at square one. It's terrible. The storyline doesn't appear to go anywhere. They've managed to put themselves on a boat for all of season two, which that limits you immediately.
How do you have zombies on a boat?
You don't, unless they're floating in the water. It's absolutely terrible. There's no forward momentum. There's so little expiratory opportunity on this stupid boat because they've limited themselves to a stupid boat that they are settling for flashbacks to explain the backstory. Just not even like a full story, like a Fuller House flashback in which they, you know, scratch their chin and then the screen goes wavy. No, literally they just go into a flashback about this main character who seems to be the main driving force, who the guy who owns the boat. And it's just the only way you're learning about Strand is through these really awkward flashbacks. And it's just like, could you be worse at writing a show than having to resort to flashbacks? It's a really, really terrible show. But my biggest problem with the show, aside from all the facts that it's just not a good television show, my biggest problem with the show is that the entire group of people here, except maybe Strand, the flashback guy, and Daniel Salazar, who is badass. Like, this guy, I'd go to war with this guy. This guy is badass. But aside from those two, every single person in the group would be dead by now. They're the dumbest group of human beings. Like, it's not even like, okay, I get it. They're at the beginning of the apocalypse. They don't know what to do. No, they're just dumb. Like, they're just, they don't know what to, they walk up to zombies and don't realize they're zombies. Like, they just let people get on the boat all the time. Like, people just come up in a raft and they're just letting them get on the boat. Oh, that makes perfect sense.
Wow.
It's terrible. It's really bad.
You've convinced me to continue not watching this show.
I'm going to keep watching it because I like to hate watch things, but it's bad.
It's man, you're on your dime, man. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Yeah, I will continue to not watch neither the terrible spinoff nor the original Walking Dead. I don't like to pay for sadness. And I think that's something that I just live by. I don't want to subject myself to sadness unnecessarily.
Well, I have some good news about Fear then.
Okay.
You're going to be so happy when these characters die that there's not actually any sadness.
I looked up some reviews of Fear the Walking Dead while you were talking, and the first review that came up is A World Where Everyone is Stupid. I thought you'd appreciate that.
They are so dumb. Like I said, they don't learn from anything. It really is like a cop procedural stuck in a zombie movie, in that they're individual episodes that have no connection to the one before it. And it's like no one grows throughout it. It's the worst. It's the absolute worst. Write me letters if you disagree because you're wrong, but it's the absolute worst.
Well, thank you for convincing me of my decision. That's correct. Appreciate it.
So anyway, on that note, that happy note.
Yes.
I think it's important for people to know how negative I am. Would you agree?
It's I don't want to say it's a central part of you, but it honestly, I was making sure that you hadn't like had too much to drink or something before the podcast. You're being so positive about Civil War and the MCU films. I think it can make even the darkest of nights bright.
Look at you slamming some poetry down,
man. I was about to start snapping and hitting my bongo, but nobody would see that.
So I would. I'd be excited. That's the end of our inaugural episode. Come back next week. We'll, you know, make sure you subscribe. Subscribing helps people find the podcast. Make sure you leave reviews. We'll definitely read the reviews in iTunes and, you know, or even on our website, leave reviews, let us know what we can do better. And also leaving reviews helps with the, helps us, you know, other people find us as well. So make sure you do all that stuff. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at RM Summerlin. You can follow Jared on Twitter. He's at GH Goodridge. I get that.
We are so inventive with our Twitter handles.
We could play a fun game called Guess Our Middle Names.
Yeah. Nobody will get mine. It's fine, and I'm okay with it.
I actually don't think I know your middle name.
Well, let's continue that conversation maybe off the air.
Herman?
It is. You think my parents would name me Gerald Herman Goodridge?
You know, I don't know what Jerry and Vicky are up to. I have no idea.
I appreciate that. They're not that cruel, though.
So anyway, so hit us up on Twitter, leave reviews, make sure you subscribe, and until next time, watch some comic book movies.
Stay woke.
Stay woke. How did I miss that? Oh, that's great. That's great. Until next time, stay woke.
Bye, guys.